Welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It is now commonplace to hear that Ukraine is on its last legs. Its collapse is only a matter of time. In many ways, this is true. However, this overlooks the fact that NATO is unwilling to accept defeat in this conflict. For this aggressive military alliance, more escalation is on the agenda. Crosstalking NATO, I'm joined by my guest, Angelo Giuliano in Hong Kong. He is a political and financial analyst. In Istanbul, we have Tarek Saril Amar. He is a historian, political commentator, as well as an associate professor at Koch University. And in Dallas, we cross to David Walalu. He is a geopolitical analyst, author, and veteran. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Tarek, let me go to you first in Istanbul. Obviously, you're following the events surrounding Ukraine as closely as the rest of us here. But, you know, you just can't help but notice all the fissures going on. You have out of capitals of NATO, you know, you have a prime minister saying this, a president saying this, and then you have Stoltenberg, the general secretary, saying another thing. Who is actually calling the shots on Ukraine policy? Because for all this vaunted unity, there seems to be an enormous amount of divisions going on. Go ahead in Istanbul.
I think you have raised an extremely important issue, which is that it's entirely unclear who is ultimately calling the shots on Ukraine policy. I would have said, usually, in the end, it is the White House. In the end, it is the Americans, because the Americans habitually dominate NATO. And one thing we have seen in this conflict is that the Americans have subjugated the European partners or clients or vassals, I would actually say, as never before. And the Europeans have really subordinated themselves. But here's my caveat. My caveat is that we have also seen another dynamic. I would argue that over the last 2 years, there have been sort of extremists in NATO, hawks, if you want. And there have also been moderates. So don't get me wrong, they're not real moderates, they're not pacifists, they're not rational, but they're less extreme than the extremists. So think, for instance, on one side you have Kaja Kallas from Estonia, and on the other side you have Olaf Scholz from Germany, right? Extremist moderate. And the big problem in NATO is that the extremists don't always get what they want, at least not immediately. That's very important to note. But the extremists always set the terms of the debate, and they never go away, and they never take no for an answer. And the others, the moderates inside NATO, inside the collective West more broadly, never make the extremists take no for an answer. This is the very dangerous dynamic that is happening in NATO right now. We are looking at the reasons for that. I don't want to take up too much time, but we are looking in this, at a situation where the extremists actually don't necessarily call all the shots, but they're constantly dominating the game. And this is why we have seen this long-term escalation, right? First it was never F-16s, because that's World War III. Now we had F-16s,
exactly.
Just one example, right? So we are never safe that the extremists are not going to drive us all farther ahead towards global conflict.
But what makes it very interesting, I'll go to Angela on this one right now. I agree with everything you just said here. But it seems, you know, when we have these divisions going on and the question comes about who's calling the shots. Angela, it's really not about Ukraine, but it's really about the fate of NATO and NATO's mission. It refuses to admit defeat. It refuses to admit that this is a ridiculous project from the get-go. Has very little to do with Ukraine at this point. Go ahead in Hong Kong.
Yes, absolutely. I think this could be a defining moment for NATO. If NATO loses against Russia, this whole project falls apart. And it could be actually very damaging for Europe on the long run. What we saw through this Ukraine conflict, this special military operation, was just to realize how the EU is just a vassal entity of the United States. And I think it's really important just to go back to history. People do need to understand that this EU project was, in the first place, a CIA project. It was a way just to control Europe, to make a united market for US product, and on the long run to destroy nation state. So the Europe is actually expanding now. Mm-hmm. It's trying to expand. It's a failing project. People are dissatisfied. I think what we saw with the Brexit is just the beginning. More countries will follow, and we see the divisions. Now we see three countries. We have Hungary, we have Slovakia, and recently it was very surprising. You had Salvini, the vice premier in Italy. Right. They actually criticized bluntly, very directly, Stoltenberg. He said, "You either apologize or you resign." And I think those are signs that in Europe and in NATO there are divisions, and I think I have great doubt that actually it can be sustainable for European countries economically, but also divisions, because people, if you were to do surveys around Europe, people are clearly not interested about this Ukrainian war. There's no support. People are interested in tangible things.
Yes.
What do I mean by tangible things? How much do I put on the table? Can I put my kids to university? Those are important things. These divided and controlled projects is not working anymore. People are...
But Angelo, the problem is here is that they can use Ukraine as a national security issue, that Europe is threatened. Then you dismiss civil liberties. You have a war economy. This serves a lot of different purposes, except for helping Ukraine. You know, David, one of the interesting things that's happened in the last few days is that we had this early warning radar attacked inside of Russia, which is extremely important for Russia's nuclear deterrence and the West. I mean, deterrence is something that works both ways. That has nothing to do with what's going on the battlefield in Ukraine. That's why I'm asking who's calling the shots here, because that's in NATO's interest. It doesn't change the facts on the ground in Ukraine. David.
Well, it's because NATO is realizing that it is losing, has lost the battle on in the field, if I may say. It's because the fragmentation within NATO became very obvious. It's no secret. It's obvious to everybody. Ukraine is done for. That's one. Second thing is the idea that now what NATO is going to be doing to stay relevant, when in reality, NATO is a relic of the past. We all know this. There is no use for NATO anymore. Where now the problem is, in my opinion, is when you have voices like what just happened yesterday in Paris, when Macron is saying, well, wait a minute, we can't let the Russians win, because if they do, that means we will be next. This is not about hyperbole, no more, no less, because they wanted to keep the ball rolling, when in reality, NATO's done for, and Russia has to think strategically, and they are thinking strategically by now, going into the sort of the preparation, if I may use the term, or even a drill for the tactical nukes, because the conversation now is moving into, meaning NATO in this case, are we going to be placing the nukes on the Polish soil?
And
I don't believe Russia will tolerate something.
You're in anticipating one of my questions, and I'll ask it now. Tariq, is Article 5 going to be tested before this conflict is over? Because I said that from the get-go, in the beginning of this conflict. Eventually, we're going to get there. Go ahead, Tariq.
Well, if it's tested, right, then there are two outcomes. One is it fails, and then NATO is discredited. And without its credibility, it's completely useless. It's useless anyhow. It's worse than useless, but it loses its ostentatious raison d'etre, right? Or it's not tested if we are all very lucky. Here's why I think there's a possibility that it won't be tested in the end. And it has nothing to do with the West. It has to do with Russian behavior. Because what we have seen during this conflict on the Russian side is a very high degree of restraint. So on one side, Russia is not bluffing. Absolutely not. How do we know this? Because that's how we got into this escalated conflict. Because at the end of 2021, they told us, you need to talk to us about settling this, or something is going to happen. We said no, and something did happen. That's where we are now. Russia is not bluffing. But on the other hand, we also have seen a very consistent pattern of Russia not taking baits. Right. So, for instance, this attack on the radar station, or maybe it was two attacks on similar radar stations. I think this is the Ukrainian ostentatiously, demonstratively launching a type of attack that speaks directly to one of the points of the 2020 decree by the Russian president on when nuclear weapons could be used.
Yeah, but Tari, but that would have been an American decision, not a decision made in Kyiv, right?
I think both is possible. Either it's something that they're doing together with the Americans, this is entirely possible, I agree with you, or it is already wagged the dog in a very extreme form, right? Because Ukraine also has shown a pattern of trying to drive its allies or its sponsors deeper into the conflict.
Yeah, but the reason why, right? I say that, Tariq, I'll ask Angelo this here. I mean, interestingly enough, a person that we hoped had been long gone was Victoria Nuland suddenly started going back into the media, talking exactly about deep strikes into Russia at the same time when this early warning radar was hit. Coincidence or what, Angelo?
It's hard to say. We're making some speculation here. I just try to look at the actions. There's lots of words, and I think what they're doing. I have the impression, especially when you look at Macron. I give you an example. Macron said, "I want to send 15,000 soldiers." Well, guess what? He has problems sending soldiers to New Caledonia because he has the Olympics. The Olympics alone, he needs 15,000 soldiers. And you know who's helping in the Olympics? They're asking other countries to send policemen to help. France doesn't have the capacity. In addition to that, we all know that NATO doesn't have ammunition, sufficient ammunition, because the military industrial complex is profit-based, it's not purpose-based. Those guys, the military industrial complex has been a money laundering machine, not for making weapons for defense. It was for making money for the military industrial complex and for all this corrupt junta in Europe.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. When we talk about what's gone on with neoliberalism, they've financialized everything, including security, gentlemen, and that's why they're in the position they're in right now. And it's something that they're going to have to pay for. Again, asking the question why there has to be escalation. Before we answer that question, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to David in Dallas. In the publication, Responsible Statecraft, occasionally it has something worth reading, and it did have this one. It's their main article as we speak right now. Putin may be at the door. Why is Biden ignoring the bell? Which, of course, is making a reference to a Reuters story a couple news cycles ago, where the Kremlin officials have made it clear that the Russian side is interested in talks, negotiations. No details given, of course, but the door is cracked open, as it were, if we can keep using that metaphor. The West has no interest in negotiations. Why? David.
The simple answer, Peter, is that it will mean that the West has to admit its defeat, and they are not willing to accept that reality. Because what this conflict showed, it showed really the disparity between the strength of the Russian military and that of the West. How the Western institutions, militarily speaking, as a former military myself, I can tell you, the West has no strength whatsoever to face the Russians. Let alone if we only read in history to understand the history of the Soviet Union, the Russia Empire, whatever you want to call it, how we went through, and it was never defeated. I mean, most of us in the West here have no idea that World War II was won because of the Soviet Union, not the Americans.
Oh, but I'm sorry, David. Yesterday, on Monday of this week, we had the President of the United States, Memorial Day in the United States, saying that the United States won World War II. Again, I'm agreeing with you.
He doesn't know what he's saying.
Revisionist history.
Americans are paying the price. Look at where America is in comparison to, let's say, 5-6 years ago. We are going down faster than we could even understand how fast it's going. Now, with the issue in Ukraine, it shows now the hardware, for example, the military hardware in the West is incomparable to what the Russians have built. Why? Because the Russians have developed and spent a lot of years in training, finished cohesiveness, there is morale that is so high when it comes down to
which
the military.
Also, David, one of the things, they didn't go down the neoliberal path. They didn't. They have an integrated military. They make all of their stuff, all of their stuff, okay? Look what's going on. Let me go to Tadek here. Look what's going on in Ukraine. We get a little bit of French dressing here. We get a little Dutch dressing there. And you put it all together and you think it's going to work? I mean, these people are out of their mind. Okay? And hundreds of thousands of people are losing their lives because this thing just wasn't thought out. All they thought was the sanctions will crush the economy, there'll be a revolution here, and we'll have a colored revolution. That's the depth of their thinking. Tarik, go ahead in Istanbul.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. That one thing we have seen in this Western fiasco, and that's what it is over the last 2 years, is that these guys never consider a plan B because they never think they need a plan B. And the reason why they think they need no plan B is that they consistently underestimate the adversary, which is one of the worst mistakes you can obviously make in geopolitics and in war. And they're thinking about Russia, what it can mobilize, what it can do, what it can withstand, what the regime can withstand, and so on, seems to be based on the most idiotic stereotypes. They simply act out of wishful thinking, and the problem is they never want to abandon it. By now, it's been empirically tested. As you've pointed out, sanctions have not at all worked. I prefer to call it economic warfare. It's the most severe economic warfare applied since the end of the Cold War, and it is a complete failure. In fact, the Russian economy, and specifically the Russian war economy, has gotten stronger. The data is in. And the West has actually gotten weaker in several ways. They don't want to accept this. They don't want to accept the failure of the vaunted Ukrainian counteroffensive with all these Western miracle weapons. That also, they just don't compute it. Now, where is this going to lead, this inability to learn? And I think you're all absolutely right. The problem here is the West is not yet ready to concede that it has lost. It could abandon Kabul in 2021 because that, from the Western perspective, as horrific as this was for the Afghans, was a minor defeat, and they could basically hide it away. They know they cannot do this once they are being defeated openly by Russia. This is already happening, but they're staving off the moment of truth, the moment when they would have to admit it.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, but I think there's a caveat here. I'll go to Angela about this. And it was just mentioned, Afghanistan was just mentioned. Well, that was a 20-year grift, and a lot of people made a lot of money off that thing. That's why they wanted to keep it going, okay? It wasn't to win, it wasn't to lose, it was to make a lot of cash, okay? The same thing is happening with Ukraine right now. I mean, you know, everybody talks about November elections and all that. These people are saying, how much longer can we keep this grift going? I'm sorry, everything we've said here is true, but we don't forget that. I mean, this is a cash cow. Angelo.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that this system of funding and, you know, having a deep pocket to fund $1 trillion a year was possible as long as there was there's a U.S. dollar hegemony. Now the problem is that we are looking clearly, there's a de-dollarization happening around the world. Many countries are actually bypassing the dollar, they're trading in their own currencies. And so gradually we will see this trend, and this will not allow the U.S. to spend as much money. So I think we need to look also at the aspect. Have a bigger picture and looking at what is happening in terms of finance, in terms of exchanges, in terms of actually pivot the center of gravity of the world economy and the world power is shifting towards the east. A new world is happening. What we look at the collective West is like 15-20% of the world. It is nothing. There's a whole world which is waking up out there, 80% of the world population, they've been colonized. They are looking for their revenge. Very important. A lot of people, they're confused. They think that the multipolar world will be the rest of the world. What the multipolar world wants to do is to include the U.S. and the collective West. Once the collective West becomes adults, more rational, less emotional, there's a big door open because it's not about either you are with us or against us. It's about how we can work together. And I think if we are lucky, we might go into a transition where we'll have maybe some kind of bailout, a bailout of Western economies, trying to find a compromise so we don't go to war.
No, Angelo, I'm sorry. I am deeply.
I
don't see it happening either. Hang on, Jen, because hegemons never give up. Hegemons never give
up. Peter,
go ahead. Jump in. Go ahead.
I have one point about your argument about GRIF, which I think you're spot on. So there are interests in enrichment here, right? Military industrial complexes growing fat on the Ukraine war. But there's one caveat to your caveat, which is these guys know how to get rich without any given war. So, like, you could imagine the future, let me put it like this, where Trump becomes president, he actually stops this war, but they're still running massive profits in the military-industrial complexes, and the label under which they would do that is, now we have to be ready for when Russia is going to attack us in 4 to 8 years. And when you look at Western rhetoric now in Germany and other parts of Europe, this is actually what they're saying. They're not just talking about the current war. They're already prepping the public to think of Russia as this long-term threat against which they will need long-term
and
mobilization.
Russia has realized that if you look what's going on in their defense capacities and what they're doing now in cleaning up the defense ministry, they know this is long-term. So, Tadek, you're telling me that every time there's an election in America, we get John McCain, huh?
I wouldn't have put it like that, but yes.
Okay. All right, I mean,
actually, if I may,
David,
Peter,
jump in.
There is some truth to that, in figuratively speaking. This is how Washington operates, because they think in terms of now. This is why you are noticing the State Department now is announcing when we're going to issue more aid to Ukraine. It ain't about Ukraine. This is about the upcoming elections. What most Americans do not understand is that this meddling into the conflict has been set up since the 1950s. The objective has always been to be involved in a conflict, not to win a war because we couldn't, but to drag the conflict for as long as possible to make money. That's what was at the heart of it. Now, the sanctions that the West imposed on Russia backfired completely and exposed, as Angelo mentioned, on the financial aspect. Because mark my word on this, when the upcoming BRICS summit in Kazan is going to be in October of this year, mark my word, there's going to be a major announcement on the financial front.
Okay,
which basically
you're talking about a common currency. Yes, that's the big buzz
now.
I got my fingers crossed too. We're rapidly running out of time. Angelo, the Estonian president, Alar Karas, he said, we will do everything possible to bring Russia and Putin to their knees. And I read that, and that reminded me of the film The Mouse That Roared. And so the Estonian president sounds like he's from the Duchy of Grand Fenwick, okay? I mean, here's little Estonia telling the whole world about the power and resolve of the West. It seems almost comical reading it, particularly from a tiny country like that. Go ahead, Angelo.
Well, Peter, do you know how we call them? The Baltic states are called the Chihuahua states. Why? Because, well, they're very tiny, they don't have much power, but when they bark, they make a huge noise, and that's the Baltic states. They are absolutely irrelevant. The interesting part is that they've isolated themselves. If you look at the Baltic states on a map, they're tiny, and they should be depending on their neighbors, Russia. What did they do? They isolated themselves from Russia and also from China because they managed to make an enemy out of China because they sided with Taiwan. That's just absurd. I think, and again, those elected leaders that was actually pre-selected by Bilderberg and the World Economic Forum, by the way, they're not working for their country. They are working against their own interest. It is time those European countries start working for their own interest.
But Angelo, those leaders, this is what the scholarship talks about, elite capture. You know, Annalena Baerbock, she works for Washington. She doesn't work for the German people. She's even said that. We have an entire European class that has been subjugated by Washington, and they don't give a hoot about their own people. And that gives me reason to be optimistic, because eventually people will get fed up about it. You know, losing in Afghanistan didn't change the price of eggs in Europe and America. Losing in Ukraine will. All right, gentlemen.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm a bit long-winded here today. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Hong Kong, Istanbul, and in Dallas. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules.